Taqi al-Din ibn Taymiyyah was born in the ancient town of Harran, which today lies in Turkey, a few miles from the border with Syria, and about 350 miles northeast of Damascus. Harran sits within the vast Eurasian region that was conquered by the earliest waves of Muslim warriors who emerged from the Arabian Peninsula in the 7th century. 600 years later, it was in the borderlands of Arab civilization. Ibn Taymiyyah's family was forced to flee to Damascus when he was 6 years old to escape one of a series of Mongol, or Tatar as they are often called, invasions that swept across Arab lands in the 13th century. At the time, Mongol armies from Central Asia had already shattered the Baghdad-based Abbasid Empire, which had lasted almost 500 years. It was said of territories conquered by these Mongol horsemen that no eye remained open to weep for the dead. This was no exaggeration. Mongol rule, dependent on the threat of collective punishment and insubordination, led to the wholesale destruction of unruly villages with the massacre of every living thing. When Hulagu, a Mongol commander and nephew of Genghis Khan, moved against Baghdad in 1258, he destroyed the elaborate centuries-old dikes that regulated the waters of the Tigris and supported the intensive cultivation of the surrounding land. As they tried to escape the onslaught, Baghdadis drowned in the flooded plains by the thousands. When the capture of the ancient city was a certainty, the last Abbasid caliph agreed to surrender. Any hope that the capital would be spared was in vain. The Mongols tore down the city's mosques, palaces, libraries, and academies. They put the city to the torch and butchered those who escaped the flames, killing at least 800,000 men, women, and children. The caliph and his sons were taken out of the city, bundled in carpets, and trampled to death by horses. By his early 20s, Ibn Taymiyyah was a powerful preacher at Damascus's ancient Umayyad Mosque. There and in Cairo, then the center of the Muslim world, he excoriated Muslims who deviated from the true way of Islam. The true path was not to be found, Ibn Taymiyyah held, in the teachings of the contemporary ulema, the religious scholarly establishment. The clerics had distorted the true path by abandoning an exclusive focus on the Quran and Hadith, the traditional accounts of Muhammad's actions and sayings, and dwelling instead on commentaries accumulated over generations. By forsaking the scriptural core of the religion and tolerating beliefs and practices that the earliest generation of Muslims, the Salaf, tried to eliminate, religious leaders had lost touch with the essentials of the faith. So Ibn Taymiyyah declared. In his writings, Ibn Taymiyyah focused on issues of statecraft and good governance as essential to his conception of Islam. This was not ground that attracted his fellow religious scholars, who had little stomach for criticizing their rulers. Such activities reliably brought a stiff prison sentence. Most paid lip service to the lost ideal of a unified caliphate, a Muslim world ruled from one end to the other by one of the rightly guided caliphs, as the first four successors to Muhammad were called. The modern notion of separate realms of the religious and the secular would have been inconceivable to Ibn Taymiyyah and to all Muslims of his time. Indeed, an integral part of Islam's glory was the figure of the caliph, the divinely mandated leader whose forces led a lightning conquest of much of the known world for the faith. Now Ibn Taymiyyah searched for new approaches that might preserve the essence of the caliphal concept in a new historical setting. He came to see the relationship between the ruler and his subjects as a contract. The people would offer their obedience to the sultan in return for just rule in accordance with Islamic law. But who then would provide the missing religious dimension of leadership? Who would provide day-to-day guidance on matters ranging from what one could eat, to how one conducted business, to how social relations should be regulated? Ibn Taymiyyah's answer was that the clergy would perform this function, in effect sharing the responsibilities of government. The sultan would consult the ulema regularly, and the routine exercise of his authority would be informed by their views. With this idea, Ibn Taymiyyah sought nothing less than a redefinition of politics. Generations of caliphs had come and gone since the first rightly guided ones, and their deference to the ulema had been uneven, to say the least. Government had become more and more secularized.